What's your earliest memory? A day at the beach where you met the ocean for the first time, the first prick of a needle in a doctor's office, the day you lost your first tooth. Mine is a green bullet-nose Studebaker. Researchers have long been puzzled by what they call infantile amnesia. Most adults can't remember much of anything before the age of 3 or 4. There are theories as to why research on what we do remember and why, which can be influenced by parental style and culture and by tears. What's your earliest memory and what made it stick? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Melinda Beck joins us now from our bureau in New York. She's a senior editor and the Health Journal columnist at the Wall Street Journal. She wrote about the brain circuitry involved in creating lasting memories in her piece, Blanks for the Memories. Nice to have you with us today on the program.
Thank you, Neil. Nice to be here.
And in a recent study by Canadian researchers that you referenced at the beginning of your piece, some children were able to remember memories from even earlier than 2.
That's right. The younger the kids were, the more they remembered from that early usual amnesia period. The average was about 2 years old. And this is a very interesting study because they went back and interviewed these kids, the same kids, 2 years later. And the kids who, by the time they had reached 10 or so, most of those early memories were gone. And even when the researchers tried to prompt them with clues or hints about this early memory, most of the kids didn't even recognize those early memories as their own.
And is this because memories don't form when we're infants or don't form permanently when we're infants?
There's been a lot of speculation for many, many years about that period and why it is. Freud thought that we were all repressing disturbing memories of incest. Nobody really believes that anymore. One theory is that it really takes at least some rudimentary language to be able for your brain to really kind of store and be able to retrieve those memories. I think it may also be that we now think that memory is stored in fragments in all different circuits in the brain, and you sort of have to keep remembering the same scene in mm-hmm. order to wear a strong enough pathway in your brain to call it back up again. And they may just not have created enough pathways at that point.
And we all make the analogy to computers, that there are certain parts of the brain that do this and certain parts of the brain that do that, and there should be a memory storage area. It turns out not so simple.
Wouldn't that be neat if there were? but the computer analogy is apt because I've heard it described as when you get a memory cue, it's almost like you're doing a Google search in your brain. It's probably the prefrontal cortex sends out beach memories, what have I got? And it's thought to have different parts of memories stored in different places in your brain. And one is generic memory. It's kind of like the scenery in a movie. Okay, yeah, I know vaguely what a beach would look like. And then, okay, who is there? And then you sort of call up through the cast of characters you have in another part of your brain. And you have actual memory, specific memories for specific events. Episodic memories are kind of a compilation of all these things. But it does go out with a Google search and probably just about that speed, too.
Here's an email we have from Alan in Wilmington, Delaware. Time and place, England, 1941. I had just turned 3. Every evening I sat on my father's lap as he ate dinner and listened to the 6 p.m. BBC News. I heard the announcer say British troops had captured Mogadishu. As a small child, I found the name funny and memorable. I likened it to a sneeze. A tissue. So I have vague earlier memories of being carried to the air raid shelter but cannot put a date to them. So it's something like that that's stuck in, but probably reinforced by everybody laughed when he said a tissue. They just took a tissue and it was a joke and it became a family story.
Absolutely. And we think that that's how a lot of these memories get solidified and are the ones that you do carry through your life. After a while, you're remembering the memory rather than the actual event. But nevertheless, it sticks with you.
Let's see if we get Stephanie on the line. Stephanie with us from Caldwell, Idaho.
Hi.
Hi, Stephanie. You're on the air. What's your earliest memory?
My earliest memory is when I was a very small child, not even tall enough that I had to barely turn my head to look into a basement-level window. My mother was doing laundry, and I was you know, peeking in and saying, "Hi, Mommy," probably. And her response, jokingly, was, "Who are you? I don't know who you are," and believing her.
Oh, so this was absolutely
yes.
freaking out.
She was, you know, she was joking, but I was just, you know, maybe two or three. And hearing her say that, of course, I didn't know she was joking.
Huh.
You know, I was terrified.
Interesting. Were tears involved?
Oh, I'm sure they were. I don't recall for, you know, 100% certain, but I probably.
And Melinda Beck, interesting. And Stephanie, we hope you've recovered from that and that the
yeah,
psychiatric profession has been enriched by that memory.
Yeah. I still have a fear of abandonment, but that's okay.
But you've probably rethought that many times and retold
oh, yes.
that story. So every time you recall that and talk about it, it's getting stronger and stronger in your mind.
Yes.
Thanks very much for the call, memory, Stephanie.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And interesting, I did ask for about tears because that, according to some research, plays a big part, too. If it's strong enough to make us cry, we're strong enough to remember it.
Well, you're referring to another study by Carol Peterson, who's the Canadian researcher who did the first study we talked about. And I thought this was fascinating, too. She and her colleagues spent a lot of time at hospital emergency rooms and taking down names and interviewing kids much later who had come there with an injury. And they found that the more the child was crying at the time, the more they remembered exact details of why they were there, who else was there, what was said. That seemed to be, they both seemed to be markers of a really traumatic experience. And as we all know and as makes sense, those two get embedded in our memories pretty firmly.
Here's an email we have from Russell. "For the life of me, I can't remember anything before the age of 5 when I found a dollar bill on the street and remember my mother saying she'd safeguard it for me. I never saw it again. The one exception to this was a memory of a fire in our house when I was just 2. I remember the room being dark, voices raised, someone picking me up out of my bed or crib. As I recall the event, I wonder if I actually remembered it firsthand or if I recreated the memory because of it being retold by my family so often as I grew up. To this day, I'm still not certain."
Ah. Well, that definitely happens, too. And a very famous example from history with the Swiss behaviorist Jean Piaget, who said that he had a vivid memory of being kidnapped on the streets of Paris at age 2 and could describe it in all kinds of detail, how this kidnapper has scratched his nanny's face. And it turned out that the nanny had fabricated this whole story. But the family had retold it so many times that it became a false memory and a very vivid one. So that's definitely a possibility, too.
False memory, of course, happened in the case of the alleged sexual abuse in North Carolina many years ago, which turned out to be implanted memories.
And very dangerous, treacherous area of the mind and of this whole research because even though, as I mentioned, memories, the more you think of them and talk about them, wear deeper grooves, your brain is still putting together this jigsaw puzzle every time you are calling up a memory. And imagination can play a role in there, and people are very suggestible. If you say, "Oh, well, Bill was there, not Bob," your mind can conjure up a picture of Bill and put him in that scene, and he'll stay there, even though he never was there in the first place.
Email from Janet in Easton, Pennsylvania. "My mother turning on the light in the hallway outside of my room in the middle of the night, then fainting. My father took her to the hospital where my brother was born. I was 3 years and 3 months old." I imagine that story reverberated through the family a few times. And this one from Catherine in Pennsylvania. "Many of mine are rather cliche, preschool age 3, trips to the beach and sandcastles. But I find when prompted by family, especially important events, I think I can recall them, or are they imagined? There must be a very fine line between real memories and the fictional ones based on pictures and family dinner table tales." Pictures, documents, those are other prompts that can help jog memories.
Yes, absolutely. Although sometimes memories tend to form around the picture rather than the event, too.
Let's go next to Sandy. Sandy with us from Miami.
How you doing?
Very well, thanks.
My first memory was, thanks for having me on your show, by the way, but my first memory was, my mother tells me, as I tell her the story, she's shocked every time I remind her in vivid detail of my father When I was about 14 or 16 months old, he was building a train set in the middle of the living room, and I, on one side, my mother would be in present also, but on the other side where it was already built, he had built the houses that went around the train set and whatnot. I would come around and try to jam like a big kind of oversized Tonka truck into one of the houses, and I remember that memory like clearly. Like it happened yesterday.
And how old were you then?
I was, when I tell my mom that, I don't remember, like, I can't, you know, put a time, obviously, but she tells me I was between 14 and 16 months old.
Wow. Well, it's interesting. Sandy, thanks very much for the call.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you.
This from Sonia in Portland. Having a violent stepfather, my first memory is of running for the garage door with my little brother's hand in mine at about 4 and 2 years old. I have a memory that does not forget the bad or the good in detail. At 55 years old, it's becoming as much a curse as a blessing as it is the struggle to let the bad go. And we're sorry for those memories, but it does raise the question of those of us who in old age can seemingly remember kindergarten pretty well. What we had for breakfast that morning, not so much.
Well, just like, you know, when you're having dinner, you get full of one food, but still have plenty of room in the other compartment. I think
dessert that, compartment, yes.
People's working memory, the kind that you sort of have up on your screen, again, with the computer analogy, and need to be able to call back up very quickly, that does tend to go as we all get older, and particularly if you're having memory problems in older age. And one theory, again, a lot of this is just theory, is that when that ability is fading out on you, you kind of have more room and more mental energy to retrieve those very long-lost memories, even though they're completely useless in the current situation.
Let's see if we get one more caller in. Nick is on the line calling from Lansing in Michigan.
Hi, how are you?
We're good, thanks.
So my first memory is more of a still image of me in my bedroom. I was about 2 years old, peeking out through a cracked door into a dimly lit living room with my mother sitting on a couch next to a man. And it was very funny lighting, so for years and years I thought this was just a dream, and I didn't tell anybody about it. But a couple years ago, I told my mom, and it turns out that this was a night that her stalker had broken into her house and greeted us when we got home. And, you know, I never told this to her, so it was never sort of reinforced. I'm just wondering if maybe me seeing my mother in distress helped solidify this.
Boy, I bet it would. You know, even though you, as a little kid, wouldn't quite understood what you saw, somehow you knew that it was potentially dangerous. Or, you know, I think that kids of all ages have a sixth sense for that. And I know I've sort of taken mental snapshots of scenes that I only came to understand what was going on many years later. So I think the mind does work like that.
All right, Nick, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
We're talking about earliest childhood memories. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And this from Jerry in Kalamazoo. My first memory, when I was 4, we were driving back from Grandma's house and my parents were talking about their memories. I remember thinking, I don't have any memories. So I vowed to remember we were driving over a concrete bridge on the highway in the car with my parents talking about memories.
That is fascinating. Because I think that you can sort of make a mental bookmark for yourself. I'm going to remember this scene. I did that once. I have a vivid picture of a red barn driving to my grandparents, and I kept thinking, I thought at the time, I want to remember this. I don't know why, but I want to see if I can remember it.
And is that your earliest memory?
No, that was 5 or 6. I have a memory of playing a board game at about 2, and I know it was there because it was the house that we lived in then and then moved from. No significance that I can tell. And I think a lot of very early memories are like that. It's like, why in the world would this have stuck?
Why that snapshot?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Let's see if we go next to Cody. Cody with us from Denver.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My first memory, too, was kind of a banal memory, but I was probably 2 or 3 and remember walking into my parents' bedroom at night to tell them I'd wet the bed. And nothing sticks out except, you know, it was a weird memory. But my question is, my father and I seem to both have a tremendous ability with our memories. And I'm obsessed with memory because it's helps me academically. So, but my wife, she can't remember anything, maybe before she was about 14 or 15, and she's got a master's degree in psychology. I studied philosophy of the mind. I'm wondering, is memory, especially the ability to recall stuff at an early age, possibly genetic?
Boy, very interesting question. I don't know that – I certainly haven't seen any actual research on that, or although I bet there are a lot of anecdotes. Like you said, you and your father can remember these things. And I think like with any human beings, there is a huge range of normal. It sounds like your wife is on kind of the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah. And, you know, we're always – we try to – at least for me, I'm always concerned with what may be hindsight bias, what am I contriving, but it really seems like I can just not only recall stuff that I have no knowledge of ever having learned, almost like it was osmosis, but I can remember being really young, and it's all just nothing significant, just really, really weird, banal memories, and she's got nothing.
Nothing. All right, Cody. Yeah. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Gene in Norman, Oklahoma, 1948, 2 years old. I remember holding on to the handle of an outside water pump. It was in midsummer, and the memory was of a meadowlark singing, "I Thought It Was a Wonderful World." And this from Kyle in Minneapolis. My earliest memory is standing on the top of the stairs and watching my mother put on lipstick in the hall mirror before going to work. I still love lipstick to this day. Melinda Beck, thanks very much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Melinda Beck is a senior editor and the Health Journal columnist at the Wall Street Journal. She joined us from our bureau in New York. There's a link to her piece, Blanks for the Memories, at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Tomorrow, John Edwards lands in court. Congressman Anthony Weiner finally comes clean. A How Could He Be So Dumb edition of The Political Junkie. Ken Rudin will be here. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.